Romans chapter 13, verses 1 through 6. That's where I'm going to start here this morning. And there is a lot of misconception and misunderstanding about the interpretation of Romans 13. So I'm going to try to give you what I understand to be true as far as how do Americans apply the words of Romans 13, 1 through 6. So in verse 1, it says, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God, but the powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation." Now that's obviously not eternal damnation. "For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is a minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing." Okay, here we have in verse 1 and 2, the powers that be, and it mentions higher powers. So the example is clearly saying there must be a lower power, okay, and that lower power or lesser power, and then there's higher power. So there's a hierarchy here. Now, the powers that be today, in our country and throughout the world, are clearly displaying their bully tactics over people. This is a tendency of Gentiles who exercise lordship, Mark chapter 10, verse 42 to 45. And deception and fear cause Christians to misunderstand and misinterpret Romans 13. Okay, so in verse 3, the rulers, where he uses the illustration of the rulers, that may or may not be the powers that be, okay, but the rulers is an example, and the purpose of the rulers here is to execute justice upon evil acts. It must be a valid law because with a harmed victim in order for the act to be considered evil. That is the biblical purpose of the rulers here in verse 3, 4, 5, and 6. But what if they step outside of this biblical obligation, or they do not have the intentions of punishing evil, or they act in a counterfeit method? So there's several things we need to consider when we come through Romans 13. Okay, in particular, in our state of Indiana, the governor has issued a mandate or order, an executive order, that everybody has to wear a mask if they are not able to be socially distanced. So I'm saying, is that valid? Does a Christian in Indiana need to comply with that in line with their interpretation of Romans 13? Okay, now we fortunately have an attorney general in Indiana, and that revealed that this governor's bully tactics of $1,000 fine and or imprisonment to be unconstitutional. Okay, so it's nice that somebody in the state structure is providing a checks and balances there. Okay, but even before that, I knew that the executive order was not a valid law. How do I know that? Because I know American history. You see, history books, what are commonly called history books, are really actually opinions of authors or editors about a certain event or person. So you're not really getting a valid picture of true history by reading a history book. The ideal way is for you and I to research the documents and or statements or writings of the people in order to get a more perfect understanding of the history, event, and or person. Now, there's a fellow online, David Barton, who's done a great job of research of this, and his website is called wallbuilders.com. Now, unfortunately, Mr. Barton has chosen to not quote from the Bible of the Founding Fathers, the King James Bible. He's chosen to quote from newer Bibles, but okay, you can overlook that idea. Now, Mr. Barton reveals the historical record that I'm sure will surprise a lot of people, that the First Continental Congress that met in 1774, in the first 2 hours of this meeting, the men spent the time in prayer and Bible study. Yes, that's right, for 2 hours they did this. Psalm 35 was one portion that John Adams wrote, Abigail Adams, about. Now, most people, when they know the Founding Fathers or the men who were part of the authoring of the Declaration of Independence, historians only want you to know about Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson because they were deists. And then everybody else thinks all the rest were deists. No, just those two, or maybe one or two more. Many of them were Bible-believing Christians who wanted to please God. In fact, this nation did not begin in rebellion, okay? It began, and not a revolution per se. If it was a revolution, it was the strangest revolution ever known to man, because they wanted to retain the common law of the land of England for its foundational law. So that's a kind of a strange idea if it was revolution. For example, the Black Lives Matter movement today desires a revolution. Yeah, they do. They want a revolution from freedom to fascism. That's what they're looking for. That would be a real revolution in a nation. Okay, but our founding fathers did not desire a revolution, and they were not in rebellion. They were appealing to the king and parliament to at least back off of these unjust regulations and everything. Okay, so David Barton also reveals that the average life of a constitution is 17 years, but here we are in America going on 244 years and counting, which is a world record. So, okay, Romans 13, looking at it with the understanding of the lawful position of each and every person in America, the born-again believers, okay? So first thought I want to give you this morning is, a sovereign believer, how does a sovereign believer respond to unlawful regulations and still comply with Romans 13? 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 21 says, "Prove all things and hold fast that which is good." And then verse 22, it says, "Abstain from all appearance of evil." So basically the idea is you and I need to be informed ourselves. When God breathed into Adam the breath of life, sovereignty over his will ensued. So the first thought about a sovereign believer is that the sovereignty of everyone began at birth. Every man and woman in each of the 13 colonies, okay, were sovereign men and women under the subjection of Britain up until December 31st, 1775. And up until then, they were appealing to the king and parliament to please back off from these excessive taxation. We can't do it. Well, on January 1st, a prohibitory act came into force, and that's when King George threw off the colonists out from under his subjection, under his jurisdiction. Before this actually got back into the colonies, it took a while, obviously. And so in February, when John Adams wrote about this, read about this proclamation, and discovered, hey, we are no longer subjects to Britain. He has thrown us out from under his jurisdiction. What do we do as a people? Well, on July 4th, 1775, they declared the independence. Okay, true independence. And at that point, now the sovereignty of everyone, at that time, men and women were sovereign over their individual wills and their actions at that time. Okay, so everyone's a sovereign no matter what kind of governing structures over them. And you cannot change their will or desires or the thoughts inside. That goes according to their sovereignty. But their actions may be limited by the powers that be. So the sovereignty of everyone began at birth. Okay, the second thought, often you may not know what is right, but you know certainly what is wrong. Okay, the majority, look at Romans 13, the majority of Christians look at it and say this is a Bible admonition that every believer is to obey, submit to governing authorities. And this is what all the new Bibles have, how they've translated it. New International Version, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except that which God has established. Now, they changed the word power to authority, and that is an unlawful change. Okay, the New American Standard Bible, every person is to be subject to the governing authorities. The New King Jimmy Bible, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. Okay, so most Christians tend to believe that they are required to obey governing authorities. It's even surprising to me, this is surprising to me, that in Romans chapter 13, verse 1, a well-known, staunch defender of the King James Bible, Dr. Peter S. Ruckman, in his commentary on Romans 13, verse 1, he states, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. And then he says the subject here is authority. No, it's not. The subject is powers. Power is different than authority. He knows that. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 24, where Paul says that there's the Lord Jesus is going to rule in over all authority and power, okay, in Romans chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 24, I'll read it. Then cometh the end when he shall have delivered up the kingdom to God, even to the Father, when he shall have put down all rule and authority and power. Three separate words there. And in Romans 13, it's referring to powers that be, not authority. What is the difference? Okay, a police officer may have the authority to direct traffic, and so he's standing in the middle of the road directing traffic. But if an 18-wheeler comes in and he puts his hand up to stop, he has the authority, but the 18-wheeler has to exercise his will to stop based upon the policeman's authority. But if the 18-wheeler, say, doesn't choose to do it or he wasn't paying attention, the police officer doesn't have power to stop the 18-wheeler. He's going to end up as a bug on his grill. Authority and power are connected or associated, but they're not the same. So then Dr. Ruckman in his commentary writes, Paul is very emphatic. Governing authorities are of God and ordained of God. No, they're not. I really am surprised that he would you know, go to a new version translation, they might say, well, it happens to be when they're right. No, they're not. Now, at this point, I'm sure he would rail on the apostate Bibles and the apostate scholars. I have no plans of doing that, okay? That's just not, I don't believe, that's not my nature to do that. And I'm not going to create a bunch of drama. I know drama, people like drama, and it also exalts their self-righteousness. No, the Lord set up powers here. There's powers. He allows this to take place. Now, if you keep reading through this commentary by Dr. Ruckman, he will admit that, no, we are not to obey the governing authorities in every instance. And then he gives some valid examples. So, you may not know what's right, but I know for certainly Romans 13 is not a command to blind obedience to any power and or authority. Okay? We can just run through the Bible and see multiple examples of this. Okay? Exodus 1, the midwives. Well, their governing power over them and authority, Pharaoh, told them to kill the Jewish boys, infants. They did not do it, and God blessed them over it. Exodus chapter 2, Moses' parents were not complying with the powers that be under Pharaoh at that time. And in Hebrews 11, their faith was demonstrated where it says they feared not the king's commandment. Okay, and then in chapter 3 of Exodus, Moses did not submit to the powers of Pharaoh, and he became a fugitive of the law for 40 years. In Joshua 2, Rahab misled the powers that be, the mayor or king of Jericho, and God blessed her for it. David did not comply, did not subject himself to the powers of King Saul, and became a fugitive for many years, recorded in 1 Samuel. In 1 Kings chapter 21, Ahab, the power that be over Naboth, ordered him to sell him his vineyard, and Naboth refused to do it. Now, in this case, the powers that be executed their wrath against, not evil, but against someone good, and murdered the man, and then confiscated, plundered the property. You see, so sometimes the powers that be will extend this out, and so that's a consequence that a person will need to consider when they are going to yield to the higher power over the lesser power. Elijah, in 2 Kings 1, was told by the king to come up and meet with him. He sent 50 officers there, soldiers, police officers, and he refused to do it. And he said, if I'm a prophet of God, may you be struck dead and fire or lightning hit him. And then you got a bunch of dead, scarred bodies there. He sent a second 50, and the same thing happened. And a third of the 50, the lesser power, realized they didn't have the power this man has, but we're going to simply request him to come. In Daniel chapter 1, Daniel and his buddies refused to eat the diet that Melzar wanted for them, asked for an appeal. Now, Daniel reveals the conscience aspect of it, where a person in their conscience wants to stay close to the highest power, so and that may cause them to not subject to the lower power. So the motive of it is not rebellion. It's not a pride. You're not going to tell me what to do. It's because you don't want to violate your conscience with God. In Daniel chapter 3, the Hebrew children did not subject themselves to the powers that be and stayed faithful and loyal to the highest power, God himself. Again, they'd had a nice outcome on earth. They were delivered, and it was a good testimony for God. In Daniel chapter 6, the same happened with Daniel in prayer. He could have prayed in silence or prayed secretly for the 30-day petition, but there's times you just make your stand. You make it public. And so Daniel, for some reason, was led to obey the higher of the higher powers, the higher of the powers that be, in order to serve God. In Ezra chapter 4, the children of Israel were given liberty to rebuild the Jewish temple from the highest power of the land at that time, Cyrus the Great. But in chapter 5, a lesser power, the powers that be, showed up, building code inspectors, fire marshal, whatnot, stopped the building project. People were afraid, quit building, and Haggai and Zechariah stepped in and said, hey, the higher power over these lesser powers says we can rebuild, so we need to go back to the task. And then they had a confrontation with the powers that be in the lower level, and but fortunately overcame. In the New Testament, Acts chapter 5, Peter and them were told not to preach by the powers that be, the local powers that be, and they said we ought to obey God rather than man. And the Apostle Paul exercised his lawful rights under the Roman laws. He was freeborn, and he, in an ordinary fashion, in Acts 16 and 22, realized he knew the law, and the powers that operated outside of their lawful authority were afraid because Paul knew Roman law. Okay, now, Romans 13, we know for certain it's not a blind obedience. And Romans 13 reveals there's a hierarchy of powers, okay? Higher powers. So that obviously means lesser powers, powers that be. The powers that be often are what you and I will confront. Now, the hierarchy of God throughout history, it will go God first, Lucifer second, okay? And then Lucifer rebelled. Okay, and God flooded the world in Genesis 1-2, created Adam. Then it was, at that time, it was God first, Adam second. Adam sinned. Okay, Adam sinned. And so Adam was replaced, God first, Lucifer second, and then Adam under that. Okay, but Lucifer again, a rebelled, fallen angels and everything, God flooded it. Okay, after the flood, it was God first, Noah second, and then down the line. Eventually, it was God, then Israel. God and Israel. Okay, but then when Israel rebelled against God, God reinstated Lucifer. Times of the Gentiles. So, of the day of the Lord Jesus Christ, the powers, the higher powers or the hierarchy would have been God, Lucifer, Rome, okay, then Israel. That would have been during the days of the Lord. That's why the Lord says, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar, and unto God the things that are God. It's like different jurisdictions. It's like the difference of following the rules in soccer or football or basketball or baseball. Okay, it's different jurisdictions. Now, the usual prospects that Lucifer will put in the Gentile kingdoms, the kingdom of heaven, like the Caesars of Rome, the usual prospects, the ones that worship him best, are the basest of men, Daniel chapter 4, verse 17. And then in many cases, very ruthless men, beast of prey, Daniel 7, verse 17. Now, the exception of that throughout history proves the rule. Queen Elizabeth would be an exception. King James would be an exception. Okay, and so certain of the presidents could be exceptions to the rule. Well, people often talk about political scandals and are surprised with that. Why would we be surprised with that? These men are some of the lowest basest scum, especially the higher up they move, generally speaking, that's what's going to take place. Now, in our country, in our wonderful country that we have, the United States of America, if you go back and read the Declaration of Independence, unfortunately, the majority of people don't even read the first paragraph. And they, whenever I hear people quote from the Declaration, they never quote the first paragraph. They always go to the second paragraph. Now, the first statement says the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America and so forth. Now, the United is a lowercase u because it was actually 13 separate nations or states that were sovereign under the sovereign people in that state. Okay, and then those sovereign ones must consent to powers that be or governing authorities per se. Okay, now what has happened in our country, which makes it so very confusing and complex, is Lucifer has created counterfeit constitutions or counterfeit authorities that will appear to be the powers that be. And that's where the confusion really comes in. You see, on July 4, 1776, there's no Caesar in America. There's no governor, no king, no nothing. It was the sovereign man on the land. Now, where the counterfeits began to really take force in place was after or during and after, following the Uncivil War, created massive confusion and multiple counterfeits. Okay, at that time, in early 1870, maybe 1871, a corporation was created called the United States, and it has a constitution of the United States, where the previous one was called the Constitution for the United States. This is where the confusion steps in our country. United States has many definitions in the legal land. It's a corporation. Okay, it can be all 50 states. It can be all 50 states plus D.C. It can be all 50 states plus D.C. plus the territories. And so it's very difficult. Now, the United States Corporation has been operating under a Chapter 11 bankruptcy since FDR. Yes, this was mentioned by an Ohio representative by the name of James Traficant in the Congressional Record on March 17, 1993. And this bankruptcy has been enacting, so the Congress are trustees of this bankruptcy since March 9th, 1933. Now, because Mr. Traficant made this truth known, it's a four-page document, the record of it, the PDF file of it, he has suffered tremendously, in fact, imprisoned for false charges, and now is dead. But what that does is that causes a grave confusion in our land. Where does a sovereign born-again believer yield his actions to when the powers that be show up in his life? Okay, so in our state, where a governor issues an executive order, many Christians say, well, that means I need to comply. No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean that at all. You're a sovereign individual. Okay, an executive order
by a governor or a president is not law. It is not law. And that is an opinion by the Supreme Court in 1803 in a case called Marbury versus Madison. So, plus, our Attorney General in our state has reinforced that idea that what the governor did is outside of his jurisdiction. Now, when a government official steps outside of his constitutional oath, he is acting as an individual. Okay? And no different than you and I, a sovereign individual on the land. Now, in Romans 13, it says the powers that be. Power is not the same as authority. Okay, a person can act under a color of law, but it not be a law. A color of law is a counterfeit. Now, I want to go back and remind you that the colonists did not rebel against King George. They appealed. King George threw them off, divorced them. Hence, they became sovereign. So it really wasn't a revolution. I'll give you some evidence for that idea, because a revolution usually tries to overthrow and not have any semblance of the previous powers that be. In Indiana, in the Indiana Code, it states the hierarchy of law. This is found in 1121. Section 1, it says the law governing this state is declared to be, okay, the Constitution for the United States and of this state. Now, I'm not sure what they totally mean by that. If they're referring to the corporation, okay, and the state of Indiana corporation, but at least there it is written. Okay, we can accept it in a legal sense or in a practical sense. I don't know. Number 2 is all statutes of the General Assembly of the state in force and not inconsistent with such constitution. So if it is inconsistent with that constitution, it is not law. Hence, one is not required to obey it, but a power that be might say it's the law, and then you're going to have to respond accordingly. Number 3, all statutes of the United States in force relating to the subject under which Congress has power to legislate for the states and not inconsistent with the Constitution of the United States. Again, I'm going to accept that in a practical sense, not in a legal sense. Now, number 4, this one really reveals that the colonists did not rebel against the laws of England. They were appealing to the king and parliament to please stop these unjust and excessive taxation. Number 4, hierarchy of law. And this is the last one. State of Indiana, the common law of England. Wow. And statutes of the British Parliament made in aid thereof prior to the 4th year of the reign of James the First, that's King James himself, and which are of a general nature, not local to that kingdom, and not inconsistent with the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd specifications of this section. Okay, So this tells us that when a power that be at the local level is trying to force their agenda through deception, they're deceived. What does the sovereign man and woman, born again believer, do? Okay, power or principalities and powers, the powers that be, okay, first and foremost, may be referring to the spiritual kingdom. You'll find in Matthew 24, 29, the powers that are shaken in heaven. Luke 12, verse 11. Ephesians 6, 12 says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and rulers of the darkness and spiritual wickedness. Okay, and so forth and so on. Now, that flesh and blood may be the powers that be exercising their unlawful powers in front of you. What does a born-again believer do? Now, a lot of times, believers will yield to Titus chapter 3, verse 1, or limit their beliefs to Titus 3, 1, where it says, put them in mind to be subject to principalities and powers, to obey magistrates, to be ready to every good work. See, we got to obey the magistrates. Yeah, but that doesn't overrule the historical record that we are not to be blind followers of any human authority, okay? And we got to recognize, what if those magistrates write it down that we don't have to comply if you read what they say, but yet they in public might say you do have to comply? You see, the issue that you and I often have to deal with is a deceived sovereign stepping outside of their lawful authority, trying to exercise their power or a bully tactic contrary to law. There's a difference between the law and color of law. It's kind of interesting, the Bible, which is a law book, in Acts chapter 26 reveals the idea of under color. Actually, Acts 27, under color. Okay, where Paul told those people on the ship that they need to stay in the ship, and then some pretended they were doing something and they were going to get a lifeboat and get out. And the Bible calls that under color. Under color. Okay, so let's see if I can get the exact verse here in Acts chapter 26, 7, verse 30. And as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, when they had let down the boat into the sea, under color, as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship. Under color is a false pretense. Color of law means the appearance or semblance without the substance of legal right. Okay, and that's where a sovereign citizen needs to understand in our country. Okay, for example, a born-again Christian in England who is under the British crown, when they're ordered to give, to wear masks or take the vaccine, they may have to comply without question. But that does not hold true in our country. You often hear the phrase in our country, it's the law, and that seems to freeze most people. Psalm 94 reveals the intent of most laws, where it says they frameth mischief by a law. Psalm 94, verse 20. In most cases, when somebody says it's a law, whether they have a uniform or not, it's simply an opinion of their interpretation. To say it's a law is a legal determination that what is what courts are supposed to do. Hearsay is not valid evidence. Now, the deceived sovereign may be disguised as a corporation, where many of the corporations are requiring face masks in order to walk into a place of business. Now, you got a couple issues there, private property, but that corporation is owned by a sovereign individual. So you're not dealing with a corporation per se or a government per se. Those are legal fictions. Now, fortunately, of late, a few of these corporations, have backpedaled on their force or requirement of wearing a mask. So I'm going to limit it to the idea of wearing a mask and or a forced or coerced vaccination. Now, what's happened in America, which is what makes it so confusing, is that in 1957, a book came out written titled Atlas Shrugged. And in that book, Ayn Rand, it's like an insider's Bible, 1,000-page book, not much of a book to read, I mean, kind of draggy. But in there, they reveal that there are numerous laws because they intend to have everybody to be a lawbreaker. And so actually, when our governor issued this order of a mandate, okay, if that is enforced, he is acting as an individual and is committing a crime, is what he's doing. He is exercising his bully tactics. And a born-again believer is not required to obey based upon Romans 13. But what if a lesser power pushes the issue? Okay, so there you have a choice to make. Okay, a sovereign can choose to agree and comply with the adversary. Okay, especially maybe if they have a gun or a nightstick, okay, or something like that. Matthew chapter 5, verse 25, Jesus said, agree with thine adversary quickly whilst thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. Verily I say unto thee, thou shalt by no means come out thence till thou hast paid the uttermost farthing. So it's going to cost you a lot. So you have to consider that. So possibly you can verbally object, okay, but yet comply under fear, threat, or duress. But then there's times you wish to really, you'll feel like, man, I just got to make a stand. Galatians chapter 5, verse 1. Stand fast in liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free. So this is what I've done. In Menards, I was going into Menards, and they said, you have to wear a face mask. Now, I've said, I object, and I refuse to enter your private property, and I will give my business to someone else. And I did. Okay? But if I needed something, and I need to override that, I might object and begin to ask the deceived person a question. Okay, it's interesting the word mask is one letter difference than the word mark. It's almost like people are being conditioned, seeing how far they can be pushed. Okay, so I've already read the hierarchy for the law in the state of Indiana. When a governor issues an order that is contrary to the Constitution, then it is not valid law, but you'll need to convince a power that be in front of you, possibly, that you're dealing with. Okay, now, this order also violates OSHA regulations of having 19.5% requirement for oxygen. Wearing a mask lowers that 19.5%. So, in actuality, he is violating a law, plus the HIPAA requirements, plus a medical condition. Plus, you don't know what's in the vaccines. A vaccination, especially force, is against the fourth article of the Bill of Rights. It's an invasion of search and seizure, putting something in your body against your will. Hence, it's not the law. You don't know the side effects of these vaccines. This is a lot of deception. Now, if you choose of your own will to accept the vaccination, then you're going to suffer the consequences from the side effects. If you choose not, well, you got different consequences you might have to deal with. Okay, but I would dare say, as a Bible believer, the intent to stand up, we want to do it in a verbal, peaceful manner, trying to reveal to a deceived party that they are following a deception, and you need to allow me the liberty to live as I freely choose. Freedom of choice is liberty. Freedom from choice is tyranny. You see, this is what the Lord did with Matthew the publican. Matthew chapter 9, verse 9. Jesus passed forth from thence, and he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the receipt of custom, and he saith unto him, follow me, and he followed him. So if you can convince the deceived one person at a time, possibly we can extend the liberty that a sovereign individual would like to continue to serve the Lord without hindrance. Okay, I think that's enough said. One simple thing you could easily do, if somebody says, walk into a place of business and says, you need to have a mask, all you need to simply say, if you want to, is, I have a medical exemption. And that's true. It would medically harm me to put on a mask. If that's your choice, what you want to do, you have the liberty and right to exercise that right. And I would encourage us all to understand the liberty that God has given us.